Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We have a responsibility to make sure that we get to some kind of sort of decent, some basic level of decency and equity in this country.
You have this winner take all economy that's just speeding up, and COVID speeding it up. And you're someone who sees the future, but you know, still has the perspective to know it's like, look, like this is going to be great for some people and like not great for others. It'd be awesome if someone was actually trying to figure out like how to account for the latter part of this equation.
For me, this is not even an issue of decency or morality, though it could be, and it is in part. But for me, I still take it back to the selfish capitalist reason we should want it, which is if this system works and we ensure that basic level of decency and opportunity for everyone, we will get better stuff. It means I will get better founders to invest in. I will get a broader range of founders to invest in, who will build a greater range of companies to employ more people, to build more dope things.
You could frame it as enlightened self-interest as much as altruism.
Man, it is hard, Andrew. How, like, what keeps you going, man? How do humanity
well,
first?
Thank you.
Far from where we're at as a country right now.
How do I keep going, Alexis? It's a little bit like you, and you've been at this for longer than I have, in that you've been someone who can make a difference in the world for a number of years. And when you can make that kind of difference, it's almost impossible not to try, you know what I mean? You've been a famous entrepreneur and public figure for longer than I have. I'm kind of newly minted that way. I mean, I was a guy before this. I mean, you and I knew each other from the entrepreneur zone. You and I met in New Orleans, among other places. So for me right now, especially in this time of COVID, you feel like there's so many people hurting, and if you can help, then you got to do everything you can. And then there is this entire election, and it's been kind of mind-boggling for me that I may be able to help in that race too. So I've been doing what I can. I campaigned for Joe and Kamala last weekend in Philadelphia, and looks like they may have me heading out again on the trail. It's just like, I've told my team, and I don't know if the Biden team knows this, but I've told my team to essentially say yes to anything they want us to do. so it's like, look, if they think I can help, like I'm into it. I'm someone, and I think you and I have this in common, Alexis, where action makes me feel better. You know, it's like, it's so hard to feel good about things unless you're doing something about it, in my experience. So as long as I'm active, then it's good for my energy level and mental health.
Is there going to be another run? I hope we have not seen the end of politics and Andrew Yang.
I will tell you what is in my heart and gut, and I've been saying to folks, so it's not bullshit. My goal is just to try and move us forward as quickly as possible and solve the biggest problems as quickly as possible. So if that's as part of an administration, great. If that's running again, great. I will say that there's nothing stopping me from running again, in the sense that it would probably be more fun and easier next time. So at that level, and I want to give you a shout out, Alexis, personally, because you were one of the people that actually got behind my campaign before it was a mainstream thing to do. And when you made your move to express your support for me, you were one of a fairly small handful of prominent figures who'd done so at that point. So, you know, I just want to express my personal gratitude to you and appreciation for how you really do see things coming.
Yeah, well, of course. And look, I think what I saw was I saw a really good organic kind of grassroots support. I spend way too much time paying attention to like the internet zeitgeist. That's been my whole life, right? Front row seat to Reddit for the last 15 years and then everything else. So, and to the extent that it helps my job now as an investor, like I pay a lot of attention to things. And I think that's become a strong muscle of mine that I've just spent a lot of time exercising. And then what I saw was also a message that admittedly I also connected with a lot. So I was probably putting some of my own bias in there of just wanting to see it out in the world. And in particular, I mean, you brought universal basic income to a much larger audience, to a national stage that it's deserved to have for a long time. I think there's been a lot of folks in the tech world like myself who have tried to talk about it in the context of like, hey, we need to be prepared for this. Like, we just don't have the automation revolution that's happening. And the book that tipped me off to this were those two MIT professors, the robotic age,
the second machine age, Eric Brynjolfsson and yes. His co-author, and it's gonna kill me just because we should look it up because I'm friendly with Eric Brynjolfsson and
Eric and Andrew McAfee.
Andrew McAfee, you know, that's Andrew what I thought, McAfee. But then I thought, McAfee, that maybe I'm just confusing that name. McAfee, <you know?
laughs> And so, yeah, the second machine age really crystallized it for me. I was keynoting some conference where I was interviewing them and I read the book as prep for it and was just like, oh my God, wow. Yeah. Like this real, I mean, I take it for granted because we live in a little bubble of tech where all of these trends are happening. Like we work with the founders who are building the AI systems to create automated self-checkout so that you can just walk into a store, grab the Coca-Cola and walk out and get charged. And that's, we take it for granted that it's happening because we worked with the founders for the last few years. And like, of course it's happening. But then when you multiply that out to the effect it has on the economy, when a bunch of work in say retail, which is a huge employer, gets automated and it is, you know, a better user experience. It's not just a cost saving measure. What do you do? How do you prepare for that? And how do you get a population not just ready, but also ensure that they have a baseline decent living? And that's the part where I'm grateful you brought it to national attention. Going forward, we've got so much more work to do. The K-shaped recovery, I live it. I see it, right? I'm having one of the most productive years of my career because I'm an investor in technology. I know there are people in my family who are being crushed by what's happening because they're on the other side of that K-shaped recovery.
Wow.
And that is not sustainable. It's not sustainable at all. And we need real solutions to help make sure that it doesn't lead to further crisis. Because I love the free markets. I love capitalism. We're at a place now where, you know, it's so cliche to say technology disrupts everything, but COVID has accelerated the adoption of technology that would have taken years. It's happened in months. And if you look at e-commerce, if you look at then the sort of flip side of brick and mortar retail, that's just one story of many. And I know this is not the last time we're going to hear about Andrew Yang and UBI, and I hope it actually comes to pass as in some form. I don't even know. I can't even say unequivocally this is the right answer because we've not really seen tests on this scale. We don't really know, but we need we need some kind of pragmatic, testable solutions that get implemented.
We know someone should be throwing down for a multi-billion dollar test. Like, we really need to get after it. This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. I'd love to unpack what you just expressed correctly about the retail experience, about self-checkout, and the rest of it. I think we all dream about going into a store, just grabbing the stuff we want, and then walking out and having it magically scanned for us and debited. How many of us have not had that thought when you're behind some people in line? Let's say it's like an airport store, and you're like, "Oh, you know, I'm kind of in a hurry here," and like,
getting,
you know,
pennies out.
And yeah,
and they're counting each. One,
yeah, so the person in front of you would be taking their sweet time, or there right now another variant of this is there is a self-checkout, but you're like, it takes me, I'll just say for myself, it takes me an extra number of seconds to identify the barcode and then sit there, and sometimes I'm an idiot just going like like swiping it back and forth and waiting,
trying to get some support. Oh yeah, been there.
Yeah. So we've all been there. So you dream about a world where it's like, look, I just take the thing, you know, like that you understand based upon the RFID chip or the barcode that I moved, that this just happened. And then you know who I am because I like scanned a credit card on the way in and it just gets magically debited. So that's a customer experience that we can all get behind, I think. And I know you've been investing in companies that actually are helping to make that possible. It sounds like due to the pandemic, interest has only gone up in these
massively.
Systems.
Yeah. And, you know, Standard Cognition is the one example that comes to mind where, yeah, we backed it. They're going head to head with Amazon against Amazon's version of this product, Amazon Go. And they're basically the ones. Standard is the company arming every other retailer to get this technology to compete with Amazon Go stores, essentially. And yeah, it means, you know, in a post-COVID world, it means fewer humans in a store. So more safety, basically, you know, fewer people sort of, you know, touching your things or, you know, interacting closely with you. But it also is not just a great user experience. It also means that for the on the retail side, the focus of the employee in the future of retail is the kind of work that is more human. And so it's like, I could pick on your favorite big box home improvement store. And there's that great Ron Swanson clip where he walks in and the guy's like, "Hey, how can I help you?" And Ron's like, "I know more than you." And he just walks by him. Right. Cause you know, I think in the ideal scenario, our retail experiences, they still involve humans in the right places, in the ways that humans excel at, where you want empathy, where you want creativity. My first job was in retail at a CompUSA. Rest in peace, CompUSA. And I was 15 years old, trying to convince people or basically help people buy the right computer or the right mouse or the right whatever.
15-year-old Alexis would have been very helpful when you're trying to pick out that mouse, being like,
yes.
Yeah, I think you want the optical, the tracker.
Well, I was a bit of a gamer, so I could give good mouse recommendations. But I also, I think part of the reason I was fairly successful at the job, I mean, CompUSA went bankrupt, but that's not my fault, was because I could have a good relationship with a customer quickly. They trusted me, and I could talk to them like a human about things that were, a mouse may not seem complex, but to a lot of people who are coming into a CompUSA, they felt very insecure about what they were about to buy. And so there was a humanity in the job that was really important. And I don't think it goes away for a lot of things. For things where I don't need Alexis to be like, let me tell you about this sparkling water. Like I don't need Alexis for that. I just need to walk in and get my sparkling water and leave. But we're going to see that shift happen. And it is going to still mean a lot of people that were normally doing those jobs are not, right? It will still employ people. It'll just be a much smaller number of them. And they'll just do much more human work when the environment sort of calls for it, when the type of retail work calls for it. But what do we do? Because this technology is inevitable. And I hope, aside from a few Luddites, no one is going to say ban the technology, right?
Well, especially not now in the time of COVID, because you could even argue it from just like a public health standpoint and a practicality and a consumer enjoyment standpoint. Like if I walk in and don't have to interact with a soul, I'm not necessarily mad at that in this environment.
I just want my sparkling water and I want to leave. And you're right. So then what is so important is that from, I think the private sector has a role to be looking for more businesses, at least as an investor, to be looking for more businesses that are still using technology, still software-based or technology-based businesses, but that are scaling employment for empathetic or human-type work. And there's a bunch of new ones that I hope will be created. We backed a company called Papa that's doing very well. That's its grandkids on demand, which sounds silly, but with 10,000 boomers retiring every day, and definitely not anywhere close to 10,000 like home health workers starting jobs every day, there's a huge need for empathetic people who can spend an hour at a time with the elderly doing everything from like helping them with their Netflix to just talking to them, right? Loneliness is actually an epidemic and has health consequences. And so health plans are more motivated than ever to bring on these Papa Pals, to take time to be with their patients, to be with their members, because it improves their health outcomes, because it actually helps bring more sort of data and feedback into the whole conversation, because they actually can say like, oh, you need to go to the doctor. Like, let me drive you to the doctor. Let me go help you pick up your medicine. Like that solves a problem that I personally don't think we're ever going to have empathetic, like truly empathetic robots. Elon begs to differ on that one, but for the time being, there are still these jobs that are the domain of humans and should always be that are very important.
We have to delve into this, Alexis. Humanity as medicine, humanity as mm-hmm. elder care, like that mm-hmm. that's staggeringly simple and profound and important at the same time. I want to hear more. It's called Papa, P-A-P-A.
Yeah, P-A-P-A. And joinpapa.com is the website. But what the CEO, so what Andrew realized was this didn't exist as a type of work, because these are not medical professionals. These are not home healthcare aides who are doing, drug administration and stuff. These are just empathetic, kind people. And they go through diligent screening process. A lot of them are actually sort of college age students who are in or learning medical professions. So if you are in nursing school, you want to make some good money on the side instead of, say, working that retail job at CompUSA, you're a Papa Pal, because it's actually helping you develop the skills that are valuable for your career that only a human can do. And it's work where you come home every day feeling amazing. Like I also worked at a Pizza Hut for a number of years as a cook and a waiter. Like if I could have been a Papa Pal instead of a Pizza Hut cook, Pizza Hut, I would have taken that 10 times over. Like I didn't have to smell like pizza every day at the end of work. I could smell like lavender or whatever these folks' homes smell like, and actually feel really good about the work I did and make good money. I think, his instinct, and this company's only a couple of years old. it's made great progress so far, tracking very well. And I think it is only a matter of time where in the next 5 years, this will be a career option because the market will have properly valued this time and the expertise
wow.
of people who are great at it, that you can make a living as a, you know, Papa Pal. Like this will be a profession and it will be something that, like as a society, we'll already value because my God, we don't do enough to support our seniors. So
yes.
like it's an easy, society is all very quick to be like, that's a good idea. And then once the dollars follow that, where, you know, off, far too often we have a lot of these jobs where everyone agrees it's a great idea and really important, but the dollars aren't there. He's going to make the dollars get there. And an entirely new class of people who, you know, are growing up and we could talk about higher education. Maybe they decide that higher ed, you know, and the costs of incurring that, assuming that doesn't change, the debt that they would take on isn't worth it. And really what they want to do is just help people and help the elderly. And this is a path to actually make a great living. Awesome.
Everyone knows that there, that we have an aging population. And like you said, like 10,000 people a day. In some idyllic vision that many of these older Americans are in pleasant community retirement facilities and homes, and they have grandkids that visit them on the regular and all this stuff. But now in COVID, even if you had grandkids who wanted to visit you, they're not going to. So then the need for companionship and help and you know, human company and contact, agree that it has a very crucial health benefit. So even on that level, you'd be like, well, it's probably going to help maintain this person's like functionality for extra X number of years. So under the Papa model, who is paying?
So you can do direct. So I, like you or I could sign up and just do sort of the direct to consumer. It's like, hey, come visit my grandpa every week. And it's just billed, no problem. But where the real growth is actually from health plans. So health plans, and these are folks who are very, very motivated to keep their patients well, right? And it turns out for them, it's invaluable because the more of this companionship they can create, the more of this assistance they create, the healthier the outcomes are, right? We're only starting to scratch the surface on loneliness as an epidemic, but the papers are getting published. There's a real health cost.
There's a loneliness epidemic.
Yeah.
For sure.
And we're seeing it. I think now we all got a dose of it, right? During COVID and the lockdowns, yeah. There are a lot of folks who are really way more empathetic with the idea of an isolated senior than they've ever been, myself included, right?
So it sounds like the Papa Pal is meant to visit them in person. So is there a ratio where it's like 80% digital, like, you know, one visit a week? Like what does that activity set look like?
So this is an example. If you ever, a good question to ask every company next year, and investors are already asking this question, which is how did COVID affect your business? And what was there's going to be a very, just like that K-shaped recovery in the economy broadly, there are, really it's at the extremes. Businesses either had 5 years of what was going to be steady growth and adoption compressed into 5 months of rapid growth, or the opposite. Papa ended up being one of the former. They had virtual companionship as a small part of their business starting out. And COVID only accelerated the adoption. So now they're majority virtual. So it started out a couple of years ago building the software so that, like, as a Papa Pal, I could open my phone, have my appointment scheduled, hit a button, and like, you know, I'd see on the map where I'd drive to go visit their home. And it would, that was a very, you know, physical in-person setup. But COVID accelerated the adoption of virtual companionship. And so that is the dominant one now. And, you know, for a generation wow. of boomers in particular, everyone's armed with a smartphone now. You know, the last 10 years in particular have brought adoption to a level where, yeah, you know, a lot of folks are very comfortable with Zoom and FaceTime that we never would have expected a lot faster thanks to the sort of necessity of this. And Papa's been a great beneficiary of it. And yeah, it turns out even the virtual companionship has the same outcomes for patients,
wow.
which is something like this is something I can't, and this is another one where I think I take for granted having founded Reddit, but I can't unsee how real relationships are, even when they are digital, even when they are total strangers, even when you don't even know what the person looks like, because I've seen that happen for 15 years on a platform where all you know is a username and the text they write. So if that exists and it's very strong, and in some cases stronger, I mean, there are people on the internet who don't know anything about Fluffy Bunny 16 other than that's their username, and yet they have a closer relationship with them than the people they see at the office or normally would see at the office every day.
Well, I hope it's been established that you can build very, very strong relationships online, digitally, in different ways. I mean, heck, there's that movie, Her, with Joaquin Phoenix, like, falling in love with his phone, which I did not find to be that implausible for anyone who was looking at it, like, you know. So to use the consumer-facing model as an example, let's say that I'm a very busy parent. I'll use myself, screw it, personally. So, like, let's say I'm a very busy parent. I've got parents who are aging. I can just sign up. I can be like, hey, great news. I've got some Papa Pal, like, for you. And then you, like, pick them up. So you can get it as, like, a gift for your aging relatives. And then they would just have someone who could minister to their tech questions. And because I will say, as an adult, I get tech questions randomly from my parents.
Yeah. I have a text I have to respond to from my stepmom about which MacBook she should buy. And yeah, no, it's tough too, because like I want to be a good kid, but I'm also like, just Google it. You don't need to ask me. This
the Google. That's a job question for Papa Pal. It's time for tech enabled.
Real talk.
Papa Pal unit to get in there.
That help us, Papa Pal. That like that, and you know, another interesting thing that I wouldn't have expected. I gave Andrew a hard time because he had a 1-800 number on his website. Back he was just starting out and we were leading that round and I was like, really, a 1-800 number? And he's like, you don't understand, like, this is the way to do it. Yeah, you can sign up through the website, but you put the 1-800 number, trust me, because it's going to help so much with onboarding. And he's been absolutely right. So yeah, if you wanted to schedule the 1-800 the Papa Pal, you could do it online or download the app, or you could also just call a 1-800 number, because for a lot of their customers, that's the most comfortable way to do it. And it's that little thing, like my naivete / arrogance in that moment of like, really, a 1-800 number? That is why I love entrepreneurship, because the founder, the CEO, he knew he had to be humble enough to go to where his users were or to build something that people actually wanted. And you know, the founders who are successful are the ones who can break out of their own bias and actually empathize. And like, so in that moment as an investor, I was clearly not empathizing well, but that's one of the things that is, I think, so needed right now, because we have so many big problems to solve, so many. And the private sector can't do all of it. Let me also say, I don't think the private sector can do all of it, but there are areas where we need entire industries to be invented. We need career, like being a Papa Pal, to be invented. And there's countless more, because we need alternatives for those jobs that are going to get largely automated. And I know this is not the entire solution, but it's a big part of it. And that's really the impetus behind why I do what I do now, because I need to help as many of those things get started as possible.
To me, the ideal vision, Alexis, is that the government helps create incentives for the creation of these jobs and industries. You know what I mean? Because like right now you look at it and you can find an opportunity like Papa Pal where there's enough money currently heading into it where you can actually build a business around it. But there are other things where you look and say, ooh, that should exist. But there aren't the monetary incentives in place right now. And this is where a lot of the sustainability efforts go. It's like, well, we all can see that we should be investing in sustainable energy products, but sometimes the money's not there because, hey, guess what? Fossil fuel is really cheap right now and the rest of it. And so the ideal situations, the government actually helps create the incentives so that people like you can invest in the innovators and entrepreneurs who want to try and build these things. Even Papa Pal, when I think about it, why I was pressing on the business model and the revenues, where to me the social need for Papa Pals is sky high. And then the question is whether the folks that need a Papa Pal have a health plan provider that's smart enough to buy it, have relatives that are smart enough to buy it and have the resources to do so. You know, you can imagine a world where the government was like, you know what? Like, I'm not saying Papa Pal's the way, but like, we're going to have like, you know, some stipend for anti-loneliness measures, and you can do whatever you want with them. You can, you know, talk to friends, family. You can like use a subscription service like this. I mean, there's a world where we can actually start throwing higher levels of resources at some of these problems. But I couldn't agree with you more that it's innovators and entrepreneurs that hopefully will give rise to the jobs we need. This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit, generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang.
We have a responsibility to make sure that although the playing field will never be fully level, that we do the things necessary to ensure like we get to some kind of sort of decency, some basic level of decency and equity in this country. And I know it's such a, God, it's such a polarizing thing right now. And I hope we can get back to some good conversation and some actual progress. The part that I worry about, and you're seeing, there's a microcosm of this in San Francisco right now. And I have not lived in San Francisco in a very long time. But, you know, there are people who are going to be angry about this technology, about this innovation. And I think there are plenty of reasons to come at the tech industry. There are absolutely, criticism is an important, healthy part of democracy in our society. Like that's great. We need that discourse. But it needs to be placed appropriately, and the solutions that come out of it need to be effective at actually solving the real problems. Because I worry so much about the folks who are getting left behind and how that will just lead to more resentment and ultimately more desperation. It is not sustainable as a society. It just isn't. And I would be a hypocrite. That's the other thing that I know these stories exist because I talk to other founders about it pretty often, but I wish we did a better job too, acknowledging all the things that helped a lot of us successful, especially business people, get to where we were. And there were things, I mean, I remember my parents telling me stories about government cheese, and I was like, what's government cheese? And so there have been different doors opened, even for people like me along the way, where opportunities were given. My mom was undocumented for 3 years and my dad married her. She overstayed her au pair visa, which is incidentally where most undocumented people come from, overstaying their visas, not a wall. Wall wouldn't have kept my mother out. All right. It's overstaying visas. And so, you know, she's undocumented for a few years, and thank God ICE didn't round her up. But that I have to acknowledge the opportunities that I got and the chances I got and that my family got. and know that the extreme technology is amazing at accelerating things and creating massive growth, but that there's two sides to it. And I think the conversations that started as interesting intellectual discourse like 5-10 years ago around automation, these books we're talking about that you brought to the masses with the campaign, need to be at the forefront, and not like in 5 years or in 10 years, but like next year, because we just got a bump, a massive one because of COVID. And so and again, there's lots of good that will come with that, but also a cost if we're not prepared as a society for it. And so it's made it even more urgent in my eyes for us to start talking about and having intelligent conversations about, because man, there's not a lot of that in DC.
No, it's not great. But you hit the nail on the head, Alexis, where the folks who are angry and don't trust that government or our society is going to actually look out for them and solve their problems in a meaningful way, they're being proven right all the time. You know what I mean? They're just looking around. And the thing that scares me is that there are so many folks who are in politics that we essentially are telling different stories. And the storytelling generally is losing its effect because people are just checking out more and more as they just say, look, you're full of shit. You're on TV. Like, you know, fuck you. I mean, that's like the general thing. And I hear that and I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like you're actually like from your vantage point, that's actually a perfectly rational way to go. And so that's like the race we're against, in my opinion, that you have this winner take all economy that's just speeding up and COVID speeding it up. And the folks, one of the reasons why I think you're one of a kind on many, many dimensions, but you're someone who sees the future, but, you know, still has the perspective to know it's like, look, like this is going to be great for some people and like not great for others. It'd be awesome if someone was actually trying to figure out like how to account for the latter part of this equation. You know, I'm not a big enough of like some kind of ideologue or asshole to think that the second half of the equation doesn't exist and there aren't human beings at the other end of it.
And Andrew, this isn't just about the like the societal thing or like the right. And I don't even make this for me. This is not even an issue of decency or morality, though it could be. And it is in part, but for me, I still take it back to the selfish capitalist reason we should want it, which is if this system works and we ensure that basic level of decency and opportunity for everyone, we will get better stuff. It means I will get better founders to invest in. I will get a broader range of founders to invest in who will build a greater range of companies to employ more people, to build more dope things.
You could frame it as enlightened self-interest as much as altruism. Yeah.
Like that. And I, that's, it's so, ah, it's so frustrating to me to see it get so distorted. Because I can't have, there's no way I could have this job and not think that way, because I started my new venture fund 776. Before that was Initialized. Before that I was a partner at Y Combinator. So I have over a decade met thousands, tens of thousands, I don't know, of founders along their journey in their earliest days. And it has only reinforced that quote. I'm going to butcher the cliche about how opportunity is not universal, but talent is. What is it? Talent is world universal, but opportunity isn't.
I'm gonna Google
it. Talent.
Yeah, is, Google it, because I'm gonna.
Opportunity is not. Too. Yeah, talent is universal, but opportunity is not. There we go. Kennedy Odede apparently said that, or no, Rye Barcoat. That's what's great on the internet. There's a million people who actually came up with quotes. So someone said that, and it's a good quote. But it's I am so, this whole career as an entrepreneur and an investor in early stage entrepreneurs has just reinforced that belief for me. And so I can't not believe that or want that for this country, because I mean, look, I think a lot of folks are looking across the Pacific Ocean for the first time, a lot more critically at China, and realizing, I mean, I think I think a lot of folks, even I would say myself included, slept on a lot of their ascent. And I mean, there's just technologically a lot at stake here. And then the implications of all of that. And I want us to win, frankly, right?
Me too.
I want us to win. And yeah. We are, I mean, we're still, the areas in which we are lagging behind technologically are shocking. And like, and some of it is more, I don't know, there, some of it's more jarring than others, right? Seeing homeless people in China get given money via a QR code. And then like, there are still, there's probably half the cafes in America I can't pay via NFC. Nope. Right? Like,
we're still using pennies, bro. We can't even get rid of the penny, but much less get rid of cash. True. I mean, in China, a lot of places don't even take cash. They're like, what's this thing?
And so here is all this fintech infrastructure. That's one specific example. But like, at the end of the day, we need to win. And I,
well, it's hard to win if you're all turning against each other and having increasingly, you know, dysfunctional conversations, and your government is way behind the curve and the rest of it. I mean, it's hard to win if your public sector is like a giant anchor.
holding us back, man. And so I hope the dialogue changes. We'll see in a few weeks.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
I made that decision to step down from the Reddit board in protest back in June after George Floyd. And, you know,
Your replacement was indeed a person of color, you know, just as you'd requested.
I was thrilled to see that Reddit passed or started adopting a bunch of anti-hate policies and enforcing them. And so I was relieved to see all of that happen. But I really meant it when I said that I was thinking about a future conversation with my daughter about the work that I did. And I really want, from that point, I wanted to start making sure that I was running things through that lens. And like, I'm a very competitive person by nature.
It's like a futurist. You're like talking to future Alexis being Alexis, what the heck, what the heck do you do?
I carry an extra responsibility, right? I have a black daughter whose mother is a superhero and who for the rest of Olympia will have people her entire life telling her what an impact her mother made on their lives. Total strangers, right? Will say like, oh my God, your mother gave me the confidence to do this.
Serena's a superhero. That's a true statement.
It is incredibly liberating because to have a partner who's achieved all that and know that there's literally nothing I could do. I could build 100 Amazons and it still won't have the impact that little girl from Compton had with everything she's achieved and will continue to achieve. It won't. And that is a liberating thing. It then makes me realize when I have that conversation with my daughter, I really need to bring my A game and have a very, very strong story about what I do, how I made my money, and the things that I really care about. The things, because I've had the greatest gift of loving the work that I've done every single day since college. And it is. It really is. I mean, the pizza job, didn't love it. But this, I've loved it. And so George Floyd's murder and then the conversations around that and after that really primed me to think like, okay, I need to run everything through this filter. And so I really see it as a responsibility to her to make sure that I'm putting all of my efforts, my expertise, my network, the things that I have towards building a better future for her and everyone else. And
you really are like the nexus of, you're like the nexus of so many of our national trends and struggles, Alexis, in you, in like a human being. It's fascinating.
It's I've had a lot of front row seats to a lot of stuff. And I do think being in an interracial marriage has been a huge asset for lots of reasons, not the least of which is I am able to get perspective every day that I wouldn't normally get. And it's, I think it helps me be a better investor. I think it helps me be a better business person for sure. And I still take away from all these experiences that the next 10, 15 years, I really need to spend trying to help build as many meaningful companies as possible and even rethink the ways that we do venture in order to make sure that we're benefiting from the talents of as many people as possible. And
that's beautiful and necessary.
Like, I'll give you the little, like a small example that we announced yesterday, because so Caitlin Holloway, who is our, she was the head of people and culture who came in not long after I came back to Reddit, and she took a huge chance on us, was a big part of that whole turnaround and growing the org from like 50 to 750. She came over with me to Initialized, and she's just come over now to 776. And her people and culture expertise and that background as an investor is valuable for lots of ways, not just because more founders are thinking about this than ever, because they realize if you get this right early, the ROI is massive.
Massive competitive.
Tension is higher. Yeah. Recruiting is much easier and cheaper, and it's just the company just works better. It's a higher functioning unit. And one of the things I challenged her with was like, what are the things that we can do? Who are the best firms at supporting early stage founders as people? Because that's, you know, an early stage company might be just be two entrepreneurs, three tops, and they're everything, right? They're trying to keep their burn rate low, and they're the entire business because they do everything. And you know, we noticed Felicis, another venture firm, has this great program they launched last year, I think it was, where they give 1% of donated capital to, or make it available. They pay in at 1% of all they invest to be available for mental health for founders. So if a founder wants therapy,
very, very helpful.
Felicis pays the bill. And I'm like, right? And I'm thinking about this and I'm like, God, this is genius. Why doesn't everyone do this? And I'm like, okay, Caitlin, we need to do better. So she announced we're doing a 2% program.
Imagine society-wide. Imagine if 1% of US GDP went to mental health resources.
Yeah.
Let me do some math on that. That would be $220 billion of mental health resources available to us. Mm. I think that would be enormously helpful. It's such a massive crisis and need right now. I mean, like we're all losing our minds, and that's among like the highly functioning of us. I mean, right. Like there are folks that unfortunately are disintegrating every day in this environment.
Yeah. And imagine if you're worrying about the rent bill and everything else. And so
I want
us to set this bar because I realize we're among the most fortunate. So let's set this bar. Let's show that it's a great return on investment. And she had the genius insight, and this was something she built at Reddit. It's what?
I just love it so much. Everyone should do it. Set this industry standard for everybody. But yeah, continue.
So she built this at Reddit too, where you could use dollars not just for say therapy, but also for personal development. And so for one employee, it was actually surfing lessons. What he needed to avoid burnout was surfing lessons. God bless. That's awesome. So
exposure to nature, been therapeutic effect.
Yeah. And so let's trust people. Look, this is kind of like a UBI thing. Let's trust people to use those dollars responsibly for what they say is self-care. And yeah, if they want to spend $5,000 on Cheetos, you know, we'll pull them aside and be like, I don't.
That's not so good. But I guarantee you that surfer is more mentally healthy than the rest of us now.
Sure. And then let's do this in public. So like every year, publish a sort of audit of how people are using those dollars. Not disclosing names, but you know, talk about all those things. And then went a step further. There's another 1%, which is for family needs. And so that is dollars you can access if you need an emergency babysitter, if you're trying to move your in-laws in your home, we'll cover that. If you've got a sick family member you want to go see, we'll cover that.
Incredible.
Up to the cap. And
you know, the other thing I love about this, Alexis, is it actually throws real resources behind it, because a lot of orgs would be like, we care about your mental health, we care about your family. And then this is like, we're going to designate 1% of invested capital to these resources. It's like a totally different thing.
And I love hearing you say this, man, because this one hits me personally, because she proposed this to me and I was like, you have no idea how amazing this idea is. So, you know, early, and again, we talk about the ROI of this. We're doing this for capitalist reasons. Okay. I was in the first batch of Y Combinator, 2005, fresh out of college, you know, 2 months in, literally in the middle of the batch. Reddit is just starting to, we just launched it. It's starting to make a little traction. I get a call. My mom has been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. And we're in Boston at the time. They're living in Baltimore. And yeah, obviously I fly home and I start splitting my time. I start spending my weekends down in Baltimore. I fly the AirTran from Logan to BWI for a number of weeks. And in that moment, and this is no disrespect to YC, when YC was just getting started, like there was everyone, it was very much a startup. They were figuring out, it's 2005. But in that moment, if they had said to me, hey, look, Alexis, you know, we have dollars set aside for this. We know you're going through a lot. You're obviously very important to this company and thus very important to Y Combinator, but this is very important to you. And in order for you to be successful, you've got to be right. You've got to feel like you're in as good a place as you can be. So we'll cover those flights, right? I would have been spending the last 15 years, every time I got on stage, every time I got in, like that would be like, I mean, YC obviously didn't need the help, but think of what an impact it would have made for a minimal investment. And so I can't help but look at it personally and think, let's have this as an opportunity, because even if only a fraction of our founders take advantage of it, the ones who do, for the rest of their lives, will think differently about us as investors and will think differently about their expectations of other investors and move this industry forward. And
caring about someone as a person and not an economic actor is the best way to build trust and a long-term relationship. You know, it's like time your manager actually clearly cares about you on a personal level. It's like an enormous deal. And so if your organization actually, frankly, like formalize it, so it's like, look, we care about your family. And again, it's not just us blowing smoke. Like we'll actually put resources to work. The biggest resource that they can allocate is your time. You know what I mean? Like if you have time that you need to dedicate to it and they are cool with that, then that's like the biggest sacrifice an org can make.
Oh, yes. And time, dude, Andrew, you've got kids. I'm going to have you on once we resurrect season 2 of Business Dad. We're going to turn the tables.
I'm a business dad. Sure thing.
I know. I love to have you on. Oh, yes. And that time math never really, it's funny. It's like before kids, after kids, and sorry to my wife, but it really, the math only started mattering on another level once kids entered the picture, at least for me, because it put a laser focus on time and wanting to, and I still fail at it, but wanting to be, when I'm with her, like all in. And really trying to seize those opportunities and those moments and give them my all. Cause again, I love the work I do. It's actually like, it is a great gift. And then the curse of it is like, sometimes I want to keep doing it, when I shouldn't be. And trying to find that balance is always a challenge, but I have a new kind of empathy now. And so, I mean, heck, I want someone who is a parent to make sure we're the first call. If they're a founder and they happen to have kids, I want to make sure they're picking 776 first, not just because we have these dollars available, but because they know we empathize and we care. And that it's not actually that generous. Like it's just that the bar is so low And so much of this industry is just still, it's very antiquated, very finance, very like PE, like it's just a different, it's a very, it has not adapted to the world we're living
in
today.
It has not adapted. Yeah, it's true. And I agree with you that when you're a parent too, like, and if you're a founder who's a parent, like the entire thing, all of a sudden the math stops working in a way that it has worked at every point in your career up to that point. So if you're an investor who understands that, and can help them manage it and accommodate, you know, like the very real demands, I think that would be also like a huge difference maker. I think someone like you becoming dad's actually good for the industry, Alexis. You know what I mean? It's like we should almost ask everyone. It's like, kids. Oh, maybe it's like have kids, and then maybe you'll understand what the heck is going on, like with these folks.
I agree. And well, it hasn't always worked out because there's some of my peers who have had kids and still don't seem to be too interested in the society they're leading.
Yeah, it's
them.
Weird. That one's so weird to me.
Right.
Like, I'm on the record saying I never would have run for president if not for our son being born. Now, I can't believe this shit, Alexis. He's going to be 8. Like, that's nuts. But, like, the first couple of years of his existence were such, like, a stretching of the soul and an education for me where I thought I knew what was what and I did not know shit. You know what I mean? And then you look around and you look at, like, anyone who's, like a parent, particularly a single parent, single mom, and like 90% of the parents, single parents in this country are single moms. And you look at them and you'd be like, you are capable of doing things that I would not be able to do. Like you're a superhero. And then you look around and then you start realizing just how distorted our thinking is on so many of these things. And that's what led me to run for president. It's like the need to humanize. Alexis, I came into this conversation hoping you would give us a glimpse of the future, and you gave us 3 big ones already. One is the declerking of many retail environments and sort of upskilling the folks that are there, but also like the seamlessness of that experience, that it's not just going to be these fancy Amazon Go stores that they're prototyping, like it's going to be everywhere. The Papa Pal, where we can essentially knight folks to look out for our loved ones, or they can knight them themselves. And I think there's like a really important mega trend there, which is essentially a marketplace for empathy, companionship, help, an antidote to loneliness. I think that stuff's going to be very, very important. And there are folks listening to this who are just like, that sounds super whack. It's here to stay. Like this is not, you know, it's like you can wish that we all were like back in another time in our lives where we all got together and bowled and you know, and like everyone's parents were like living in, you know, the same, you know what I mean? Like you can wish that, but time is not heading in that direction. And then the third mega trend you identified, which I love, is this investment in mental health and family resources at an institutional level, that if you were to do that, like that actually, and I'm going to say you're a very smart investor, and it's like, it's good for, even if you just were to go in terms of capital efficiency and high functioning orgs, like this is a great investment. This is a win. You know, it's like you have like a more balanced, less stressed out, more functional founder, management team, workforce, etc. Like, you know, it pays. So those are 3 enormous mega trends. Also, you're championing paid family leave. It completely also makes sense on every level. So you delivered, man. 3 mega trends. Which was sort of,
let you down, Andrew.
Yeah, which was sort of like what I had in mind was like, oh, I wonder if like, because I knew you would, because you're literally staring at the future all the time. And one thing I love about you is like you've worked in the future, but it has not really changed your fundamental humanity. Like the deeper you get into a space, the more natural it is to frankly kind of adopt the values of that industry, town, job, whatever it is, and kind of lose your essential humanity. And that's true in DC. It's true in Hollywood. It's true on Wall Street. It's true in Silicon Valley, where you just like get the random person who's been in that environment. A lot of times they kind of give off things where you're like, Like this is almost like as if it was scripted. Like, you know, you're the scripted, you're the scripted DC bureaucrat.
Right, out
like
of
the
central casting.
Yeah, there's so many. Yep. Like, you've met them, I met them. Like, and you have defied that in a way that is such an incredible
thanks, Andrew.
Example. Really, that is actually very, very, that's like the highest praise I can think of coming from.
No, that's
from
me. It really is. The only secret I can come up with has been, and you touched on it, which is I actually just don't spend a lot of time in the tech community. I've been a nomad for the last like decade. I mean, my working life really the last 10 years has been traveling before I met my wife. So like 5 years ago and earlier, I would travel usually between New York, LA, San Francisco, and then other random places almost throughout the year. And I was just always very comfortable doing that. And then, you know, start dating, get married to my wife, have a baby. I like seeing them. So I travel most of the year to make sure I'm never away for more than a couple of weeks. And it's actually been fun because now that everyone is in Zoom land, I'm kind of like Bane in Batman, where he's like,
you merely adopted the Zoom lifestyle. I was born in it, molded by it.
And like, I really feel naturally, like I feel pretty comfortable being in Zoom for most of the day because I've just had to do that for the last 10 years. And I haven't had to travel as much, which has been actually kind of nice. But that has dipped me into so many different communities, so many different industries, I'm naturally intellectually curious person, such that I never drank enough of the Kool-Aid. I mean, the downside is I also feel more like an outsider in the Bay Area. I definitely don't have as strong of a network in the Bay Area, but I think being a generalist in that way and being more agnostic has served me quite well. I think it helps me find a wider range of founders, invest in better companies, help them more, all that other good stuff.
You'd have a completely different perspective, man, than someone who's like been in that town, particularly that town the last number of years, because that town has really gone in a very specific direction the last number of years.
Maybe this is, you know, and there is a flight from San Francisco happening right now, and it's obviously the most wealthy and movable who are fleeing. So we'll see what impact that has. But I think over time, the fact that those of us who are in this industry of tech are able to do more of their work from almost anywhere, I think there's going to be a serious shift in where people are living and where they're spending their time. And I mean, we're building 776 to be fully remote from day one. Most of the companies we're getting pitched are either flex, where there's a few of them in the same space and they get together like once a week, or they're fully remote from day one. I hope that one nice outcome here is it's going to mean just that broader geographic diversity of where people are is going to mean that like you'll get done with your meeting, you'll go out and I don't know, you'll be on a farm in Wyoming and you'll go down to Main Street and you know, it's a population 5,000 because you just like the mountains and you hate just city life. And you'll just have different conversations at the cafe. You'll have a different community that you live in and engage in. And I hope that means a healthier, we'll see, but I hope that means healthier orgs. Because we're sort of getting exposed to more ideas. And I mean, that was the other thing that I really enjoy is that you're such a not politician that like when you get in the semi with the truck driver and talk about what he's excited about or what he's hopeful about or what he's afraid of and what he thinks of automation, et cetera, it doesn't feel like a politician pandering. It actually looks and feels like a human being genuinely interested in another human's way of life, even if it's totally foreign. And
I am genuinely interested. Like yeah, I genuinely do want to know.
and it shows. And I think that is, if there's any reason or if there's any way that you haven't plumbed the depths of DC, but I don't think it will change you when you're president.
I'm a little bit too, at this point, fully formed to like show up there and start drinking the DC Kool-Aid.
Right?
Being like, oh, this steakhouse is unbelievable. I don't even know how the DC, repartee goes.
Dude, they weren't supposed, and it's so dangerous to go back to like founding father's intention, but I feel good about this one. Like, this wasn't designed to be a lifetime appointment. It wasn't designed to be a career. It was designed to be service. It was designed to be, okay, like, I'll leave my family and I'll go up here and we'll do this work because it's really important for my community. And it's not like, oh, this is what I'll do for the rest of my life. And whether it's term limits, whatever, like, there something has to change there.
Term limits.
Right? Because it is clearly
a target. I've got a master plan too, Alexis. My plan is to say term limits, but current legislators are exempt. And then they'll be like, okay, and then no skin off their back. And then, you know, eventually they get grandfathered out. Like, that's master plan. Anyway, I've got a few master plans trying to make some good things happen.
It would be a boss move, though, for someone to run for Senate or the House. Maybe they have, and explicitly say one of the things they're running on is term limits.
There have been a few people who've come out for it. There were maybe a dozen members of Congress, including Beto, who I'm friends with, like Kate came out for term limits. I think Ro Khanna may be for them. He's Silicon Valley's
Bay Area.
Member.
Don't equate me with Silicon Valley, Andrew. I'm a proud Floridian.
Wait, so, hey, people watching this, when you see the news story, it says Florida man, it's Alexis.
do you know the reason why that's a meme?
Just because there's always the news stories?
Well, yes, that is true. But the reason why, and this is, I got to defend my state now. Florida has these sunshine laws, cute name, where all of the police records are made public.
So it's just transparency.
Who have a wealth of information. Now, yes, Florida is a very populous state, so there's just a lot more.
There'd be a lot of strange fact patterns if you just took all the information and dumped it. That'd be true.
Yeah, and like, yes, I will agree, it's a weird, weird state that probably has crazier than average people. Like, per capita, the craziness is definitely higher in Florida, but it's not as high as Florida man makes you believe, because it's the Sunshine Act that makes all those public record.
Look at that. An entirely rational explanation for a phenomenon we've all become somewhat familiar with.
Again, still a really weird state, but it's not a fair fight.
Well, Alexis, you make any place you go stronger, better, more human. Really great to reconnect with you. And thank you for being one of the early champions of the Yang Gang.
Dude, anytime.
Before it was a thing, really.
whatever you do, Andrew, you've got, well, I see, just about anything you do, you have my cosign.
Well, thank you, Alexis. We need to... Yeah, vice versa. We need to try and solve some of these problems that you're working on, that we have to create these opportunities. And you're one of the leaders in the space that's actually seeing the problems for what they are. So thank you. Hopefully we'll have a chance to spend some more time together.